Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Yeah, new sting.
It is too. MOTAT. I haven't heard that before.
That's right. This
thank
is
you,
new.
Thank you, MOTAT.
Thank you, MOTAT. Yes. Isn't it nice?
It is. It's really cool. Nice. Yeah, really appreciate it.
And it's exciting. It is. I feel new. It's like new year, new me, new Dear Science.
Indeed, indeed.
But first story is a bit of a sad story, actually. We did talk about the Opportunity rover, but it was before it was dead.
Dead, yes, yeah. Indeed. Yes.
So it's officially died.
It's officially died as of essentially last week, unfortunately. So, and this is a quite remarkable piece of science, really. It's it's humanity at its best, let's say. So we put this thing, I say we, I mean,
yeah, I was
people
there.
Much more intelligent than me.
So was L&P. Yeah.
And they flew this thing 160 million kilometres away and plonked it on another planet, for goodness sake. And it survived a whole 15 years. It was meant to survive 90 days. That was its operational lifetime.
That's over-exceeding, to say the least.
Just a touch, yeah, yeah. But utterly, utterly incredible. And to think that it's made it there. Now, this was launched in 2004. And its sister rover, I guess you could call it, was Spirit, and that was launched a wee while before that. And that died in 2010.
Which is still a fairly long time.
Yeah, indeed. Again, yeah. Exceeding expectations enormously. And so 15 years, and it survived all sorts of things. It got stuck in a sand dune in 2005, and then there was a big Martian dust storm in sort of around about 2007. It survived both of those, and it travelled a whole 45 kilometres over the 15 years, which might not sound like
a lot. Yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot.
But it is, you know, that's a long way. Remember, you're controlling this thing from 160 million kilometres away, and it's using 2004 technology. Or 2003,
yeah.
And that's the really amazing thing that I think we all overlook. That, you know, this is pre-iPhone.
True.
So you've got this thing up there.
Which you couldn't call a smart. I mean, I suppose maybe that is the first smart kind of device.
Well, just the fact that it's using technology that's now 15 years old. You know, anything that's, 3 years old, we just throw out. You know,
yeah,
it's obsolete. You can't use it anymore.
Right.
And this thing's using 15-year-old technology. It survived that long.
When you say it got stuck in a sand dune,
yeah,
and it, you know, survived these sandstorms,
yep,
how did it get out of these things?
Good question, but they managed to get it out, you know, I don't know, spinning the wheels, something like that. But
if it's done 40, you know, kilometres,
yeah,
that means it probably was moving really slowly because it was obviously taking in a lot of information, right, and transmitting back home.
And it did a 21-kilometre journey to a nearby crater, and that took it 3 years.
Wow. Good effort.
But I urge you all, if you've got even the slightest interest in this, to have a look at the photos on NASA's website, because, you know, this is another planet, literally another planet. And, you know, this thing is there for all eternity now. It's there. Let's say a monument to humanity's progress, I guess.
Or you could say that's, you know, us littering on another planet.
Oh, God, no.
Two different ways of looking.
But it made, you know, wonderful, well, it got fantastic photos and wonderful scientific discoveries, the fact that there had been water on Mars sort of way back when, and that was the first sort of real proof of that. And, you know, at $800 million, you know, that's a steal. Really?
You know, I don't know if you've ever had $800 million to spend on something. But yes, I suppose it has made some incredible achievements. Could you just explain actually how it works? Like, was it a solar-powered something? Is that how did it?
That's my understanding, is it's solar-powered, yeah.
And is that why it eventually died, because then
I think it died because it was 14 years old, the fact that it did get caught in another big gigantic sandstorm. This sandstorm went for 3 months apparently.
Wow.
And covered all of Mars, and so what it was meant to do in those situations was to put itself to sleep, and it did so, but it never woke up. They couldn't get it to wake up. So
that's sad.
I know it is. And, oh, they had this thing on Facebook or something, this little computer screen, and what did it say? It said, my battery is low and it's getting dark. Oh.
Who said that?
Yeah. No, it didn't say that.
This technology is not 2003 technology. Okay.
But yeah, no, apparently there were tears shed in the control headquarters when they couldn't pick it up and everything. So
I suppose people would have worked on that throughout that whole time, and they would have had a relationship with it for that.
Well, I think, who is she? I think she's the deputy director of it, and I think she visited when the rocket took off, and she was 16 years old. She was a high school student and got a special invitation to NASA to come and see this or something. Now she's ended up as sort of the deputy director of the whole thing. So, you know, this is people's lives.
Yeah.
It really is. You know, you're surely going to get attached.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So well done opportunity.
Yeah.
We'll miss you.
Yeah. And we may talk about you again. You know, when we talk more about Mars and that sort of thing, we'll
absolutely
look back and think, hey, opportunity helped us.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
So, onto a lesser magnitude type story, push-ups. And apparently, I mean, we know that they're good in the sense of health-wise.
They don't feel very good, do they?
No, but if you're good at them, apparently this is good for your heart.
Well, okay, so what's the number one cause of death in New Zealand, Lillian?
I would go with lung cancer, but proximity-wise, because I know what the story is about, I'm going to say heart problems.
Heart disease, there we go. So number one cause of death in New Zealand. So wouldn't it be nice if you could maybe lower your risks of heart disease and not die early?
Yes.
So what some people have done at Harvard, this is a new study. Well, I say it's a new study. It's just been published, but it's actually a 10-year study where they have looked at 1,104 active male firefighters from the age, their average age at the start of this was 39.6 years. And as I say, they looked at them over 10 years and they found that over those 10 years, 37 of them experienced some sort of heart failure, or they died some sort of cardiac-related death, or they had coronary artery disease. So that's 37 out of 1,104, and you'd normally think of firefighters as being pretty
very
fit.
Healthy.
Oh, yes, indeed. Very, very healthy, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, of these people that died, all but one of them couldn't do 40 push-ups in their medical test when the exam or when the test started.
Right.
Okay, so that was 10 years ago and they couldn't do 40 push-ups.
And did they continue to do those tests throughout the 10 years?
No. I think that was just, you know, they were basing it on that particular level of fitness.
Right. At that time.
Yeah. And then they monitored their health over time. And so 40 seems to be the magic number for push-ups to stop or to lower your risk of heart disease.
It seems like a far-fetched kind of study, do you think?
Well,
there's so many other things that could have been at ice. Yeah.
Well, I get you're trying to minimise your variables, I guess, in things like this. So the fact that they're all firefighters is probably that takes out one ginormous variable. You know, the varied lifestyles and stuff like that to a certain extent, I would imagine. But you can never get rid of, you know, all of the variables and stuff. And apparently, so there must have been some firemen there who couldn't do 10 push-ups, because what they found in the study that there was a 96% reduction in cardiovascular disease events between those who could do their 40 push-ups and those who could do fewer than 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's big.
Within the 10 to 40 range, though, you're still doing good for your heart.
You are. And the more you can do, the better for your heart it is.
Because the other thing is, your normal sort of average person isn't a firefighter. So there's going to be all these other variables.
And your normal average person doesn't do 40 push-ups every day.
Yeah.
I just bought a rowing machine just for Christmas. So,
So we'll see how you go. Maybe you should add at the end of every session, try and do some push-ups and then, you know, gradually.
Well, apparently they were saying that this is even better than a treadmill. So they were looking at results, sort of similar studies or something where people are on treadmills, et cetera, running whatever. And apparently the whole push-up thing is a better predictor of your heart health than...
What?
Yeah, than doing your treadmills and running and stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to do some push-ups. This is the other thing that I mentioned, because the study did focus on men. So
yes, indeed.
What about women?
Well, I wouldn't mind betting that they're going to do that as a follow-up study, because that will guarantee, you know, research funding,
yes,
I'm sure.
And and in the sense that, I mean, you'd probably find a similar finding.
That's the hypothesis, isn't it? I would imagine so. But again, you know, somebody's got to do the study. So as usual, more research is required.
Right. Okay. Hold that thought.
It's always the way of science. More research is required.
Yeah.
It means more money is required.
Yes. Usually.
Yeah.
Okay. Last story, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know if this is something everybody, I mean, I suppose people worry about this, but probably...
Well, they probably don't worry about it until it's too late.
Yeah, okay.
Probably, I think.
Okay. So there's been a study to see whether it's okay to drink beer before wine whether that doesn't make you sick.
Apparently, because there's an old saying, apparently beer before wine, you'll feel fine. Wine before beer, you'll feel queer.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the one that I knew was beer before wine, you'll feel fine. Wine before beer, you're in the clear. So both ways, you're okay.
Oh. Yeah, that's confusing.
It is. But some scientists over at Cambridge, of all places, and in Germany, decided to test this. And where the hell they got the funding for, I do not know the funding from to do this. But they obviously did. And so what they did was got 90 volunteers. And I imagine they probably didn't have too much difficulty getting those volunteers.
Yeah, I guess funded alcohol drinking sessions.
And if you look in the actual paper that was published, you see that Heineken provided the beer. So
okay, nice little promo for them.
And so 90 volunteers, and they're aged 19 to 40. And what they were asked to do was to drink after having been given a meal first up. So they had a standardized meal, which was standardized for their weight, age, blah, blah, blah. And then they're split into three groups. And the first group had to drink 2.5 pints of lager and then 4 large wines. And the second group had to do that in reverse, so 4 wines and then 2.5 pints of lager. And then the third group just did straight beer or straight wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kept drinking essentially until they had a blood alcohol of 0.11%.
Okay.
Which you're pretty pissed by that stage, probably. And then they came back a week later and did it again, except they did the reverse order. So those who'd done the beer before the wine now did the wine before the beer.
Yeah.
And the ones who drank only the wine then drank the beer and blah, 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 blah. And then they ranked them on the severity of their hangovers, essentially. So they asked the people to rate how they were feeling after that.
But that could get a bit murky.
Subjective, you reckon?
That's right.
which is the problem with many of these sorts of studies. It is very, very subjective. But I guess the larger number of people you've got, the more confident you are. This is only 90 people, but it got published, so it must be halfway decent. And what they found was no difference.
No difference?
No difference.
So it doesn't matter. You're still going to feel terrible, or you'll still feel okay?
Yeah, you'll still feel terrible, apparently, according to that.
It does make your hangover worse. That's what they found.
No, it doesn't make your hangover better, I guess, would be what they're saying. So it didn't matter which way around you did it, you still felt crap, basically. Yeah.
And the people that just had wine or just had beer still felt crap.
Yeah, they still felt crap. Okay. So there was no difference whether you had wine itself, beer itself, or you didn't, whichever order. That's it. So that is that old tale put to bed.
Yeah.
Basically. So
I feel, well, I suppose that was, I don't know, I'd say that's a useful study or not. Useful time. Somebody texted in, though, and I'm not sure if they've said this is a correlational study, it sounds like, so be careful not to attribute causation. Would that be for the push-ups or for the drinking?
Possibly for the push-ups, maybe.
I think probably that one.
Yeah, as I say, you know, there is a lot of variables out there. Well, there are a lot of variables out there, I guess. But supposedly, they know what they're doing, statistically wise. So, yeah.
Alrighty. Do you want to have a little chat about an element?
We can have a little chat about an element. And this gives me a perfect opportunity to put in a little plug here. Thanks, Lillian.
You're welcome.
For a rival radio station and all. If you're at all interested in the periodic table, if you go to www.rnz.co.nz/chemistry, you'll find the first episode of a podcast series in which yours truly talks you through all of the elements on the periodic table, and that's going to go all year.
Because it's the International Year of the Periodic Table.
You got it, and the more people who know that, the better. So
that's why we're talking about it.
So I thought we'd talk today about an element called americium.
I don't know that one.
You don't know that one, and yet it's probably in your house.
Oh.
Yeah.
And
it's
what?
Probably around here, if I look closely. Ooh, no, I can't see one. So, americium. Okay, so it's a radioactive element.
Yes.
And it's right down the bottom of the periodic table, that because it's radioactive, or either way. And it's also a synthetic element. It doesn't occur naturally on planet Earth, so it's got to be made.
Okay, and why would we make it?
Because we can. Because we can, okay? So if you go past element number 92 on the periodic table, which is, Lillian?
Yes. Which number? Sorry, I was reading a text. What was the question?
Element 92, what is it?
Oh, fuck, I don't know, Ellen.
It starts with U.
Uranium?
There we go.
Yes.
Good. Right. Okay. So if you go past element 92, all of the elements past 92 don't occur naturally on the planet.
Oh.
Except for tiny, tiny, tiny little bits, but we don't worry
okay.
about that.
Why?
So why? Because they're too big.
Okay.
Okay. And if they're too big, they just fall apart, basically, okay. spontaneously. And that's why they're radioactive. That's what happens when they fall apart. They give out these radioactive rays, that we call them. And so americium is a radioactive element that was made in 1944 during the Manhattan Project. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it was during the war, so they had to keep it all secret and everything. And
right.
blah, blah, blah. So they didn't announce it till after the war. And why is it in your home? This is the payoff here. It's in smoke detectors.
Oh.
Okay. So the way that it works is you've got a little bit of radioactive americium in there. Yes, it's radioactive, folks, but there's so little of it. Don't worry. Okay. And if you get little smoke particles, it basically detects them through its radioactivity. We won't go into the hows and whys okay. of how it does it, but that's basically what happens. So if you have a fire, you get tiny little particles of smoke, and that's detected by your smoke detector thanks to this americium.
Americium, yeah, so it yeah. is good that we make it.
It is, yes, yes. Named after America.
Oh.
Americium. So if you spell it out, americium.
Okay.
And it's named americium because it's directly below europium in the periodic table. So you've got Europe and then you've got America.
Wow.
So, you know. Oh.
There's, what? There's countries in the periodic table?
There's countries,
table?
Oh, hell yeah.
Or
there's,
continents?
There's francium, there's polonium after Poland, there's germanium after Germany, etc.
Is this because they've been discovered by people from there?
Or discovered there, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, there's all sorts of people, there's all sorts of countries on the periodic table. Yeah. Oh, I could go on and on, yes. but I can't
because we've got to talk about it all year. So we can't talk about it all in one day.
Indeed, yes.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
All right. So
controversy
got some
here.
Text in. Okay. Well, somebody texts in and saying BFM funded beer after grass. You're on your ass? Question mark. And somebody's saying,
study. Yes.
OMG, beer wine order! Exclamation mark. Please refer to something vaguely scientific.
This is scientific. This was published. This was published. In,
but what they're saying yeah. is your liver concentrates detoxification on the most recent drink. If you drink the strongest drink first, then switch down, your liver will also switch to the weaker booze. The murky bit is how your personal physiology copes with any one type and particular version of any drink.
Ooh, okay. So I think this person had better write a rebuttal then. There you go. You've got a publication.
Yes. And what apply for funding.
Yes.
And we'll do the test, me and you, Alan, and we'll do the drinks. But that was great. This is because this is what I always understood, right? This is what you generally, I don't know, I got taught, I suppose, or yeah. people tell you. Don't, you know, if you start on beer and then you go to a spirit or something, yeah. don't switch back. So the idea of something stronger, you just stay on the stronger one and then you're not going to get.
Well, I think they're saying that that's basically bull.
Sure. This research.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically it. So, you know, if you really, really disagree with this, then, you know, go and have a look at the paper and then, you know.
Just write a strongly worded letter.
Indeed, yeah.
Okay.
By all means, because that's the way that science progresses.
Questions and challenges.
Indeed.
Rebuttals.
Absolutely.
Good point. Thank you, Alan. It's great to have you back.
Pleasure.
And it's great that we have MOTAT.
Yes, thank you, MOTAT.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next time.
Shall do. See ya.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.